This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We hear a lot about how difficult it is in Greater Cincinnati for individuals and families to find the housing they need at a price they can afford. A team of public media journalists has spent months digging deep into the problem and identifying solutions. Their regional community affairs program is called Brick by Brick, Solutions for a Thriving Community. And it's produced by Public Media Connect, a partnership between WCET-TV in Cincinnati and Think TV in Dayton. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about that work are Brick by Brick host and producer Ann Thompson, multimedia journalist Hearns LeGaire Jr., and executive producer Mark Lammers. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Lucy.
Thanks.
CET is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Ann, first things first, we miss you desperately at WVXU.
I can't even believe, Lucy, that I get to be on your show again.
I'm very excited. I know. We thought it was the fond farewell the last time, but here you are.
I just won't go away.
Yes, I'm glad. Thank goodness. Tell us the origin story of Brick by Brick.
Okay. It's certainly an important issue. We wanted to take a look at various issues impacting communities and figure out a way to offer up solutions. Solutions journalism is something that's increasing across the U.S. Journalists are taking a look and trying to spend more time on solutions rather than just the problem. And it's not just a big idea, but something that's actually been tried. So we look at how it's worked and what the limitations are. So this is one way we could look at that issue.
And Mark, it sounds like you were very instrumental at the very beginning of this. Why housing? Why was that the issue you all settled on?
So CET and Think TV had done a lot of work in the documentary space and with public, you know, conversation specials about redlining, as well as working in the Cincy area with Urban Consulate to do specials around building an equitable future. And the results were a lot of audience engagement around those projects and those stories that we shared. In a lot of ways, we brought the problems forward to today with that effort. And this is about taking it to the next level. This is about responding to all of our audience feedback of what do we do now? You've brought us up to the legacy of redlining. You've brought us up to the legacy of restrictive covenants and our segregated present. And so what we wanted to understand was, you know, what kind of solutions were actually out there for, you know, more attainability of housing, more affordability, and essentially a sustainability of all of our thriving neighborhoods.
Hearns, you and Ann mentioned frequently in your podcast that you're not experts on housing, but you've covered a lot of ground already. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the biggest problems facing the region when it comes to housing?
Yeah, I think across the board, the one thing that people agree on is that we just need more. We just need more housing from the developers, from residents, to people at different economic levels. Everyone is just looking for more because the housing market is tough right now. People who are looking to be first-time home buyers, it's hard to find a space. Seniors who are looking for a place to downsize, it's hard to find a space. So I think that's one thing that everyone is finding to be a similar issue. And you know, we like to say that we're learning along with everyone else. And I would say the one thing that became very apparent in our research, especially when it comes to affordable housing, is that affordable housing is expensive, right? When you look at a lot of these issues, you see that there are a lot of hurdles, and that's the reason why we're in this housing crisis in the first place. I would say that's the main thing that we've been learning in this process.
Brick by Brick has done a lot of reporting on how we got here into this housing problem as a region and as a nation. You had a really interesting interview with authors Richard and Leah Rothstein, who pointed out that this goes way back. And I'm going to ask both you and Hearns to start with you, Ann. What were your big takeaways from that interview?
I probably, you know, I'm kind of ashamed to admit I didn't know a lot before I read their book or books. And just hearing the history and how it was engineered, like it didn't happen by accident, segregation. The government played a big role. And so I feel really ashamed about that. But knowing that there are ways that we can try to right wrongs, you're right. They were very informative in what they were passing along.
Kearns, what was your big takeaway?
No, yeah, to piggyback off of that, you know, in reading Richard and Leah's book, they point to the federal government quite a bit with their role into why we are where we are right now. But, you know, I'm thinking, okay, if the problem originates from the federal government, surely the federal government also has the solution. I'm thinking that, like, we can all come up with small solutions, but, you know, the originators have the solution. But Richard Rothstein said it quite frankly, he doesn't think that the federal government has the political will in order to make changes. And that's something that I thought was real real interesting, because that means that the answer relies within local government. It relies within, you know, public-private partnerships that's happening on the local level, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah. Hearns, you recently reported for the NPR affiliate in Detroit. What is Detroit facing when it comes to housing, and how has that, or has it, informed the work that you're doing with Brick by Brick?
No, yeah, I think I've been fortunate to live not only in Detroit, but in New York as well. And you find that the issues are the same. The prices are going up, but the wages are staying the same. So you have a lot of people who are finding it tough to make their dollar stretch all across the board. Taxes, you know, when property taxes increase, and people are just finding it hard to make that make sense, and to also get their groceries at the same time, and to, you know, have money for their kids and have money for themselves and stuff like that, is you realize that, like, the finances is the thing that really troubles folks. You know what I mean? So I would say that's the one thing that I see in Detroit, that I see in New York, that I see in Cincinnati, and it's pretty similar across the board.
Yeah, kind of the common denominator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Lucy, some people might wonder, well, what difference could you make, our team, by doing this podcast? And, you know, of course, we're offering up solutions, but we actually have seen some, just little, through anecdotes, of possible change. So in terms of, remember with the port and them buying up all those homes, trying to keep them affordable?
Mm-hmm.
We also covered Dayton. So we went up and interviewed people at County Corp, and they said, like, oh, that was really interesting. Like, we'd like to do something like that. And, oh, we'd like to have some of the same powers as the port does. And so he was going to speak to his board about that. And just a few other things. One of our funders suggested, when we were looking at eviction protections and the right to counsel, why couldn't we do this by using UC students? Hmm. Well, at the Help Center here in Hamilton County, he is a professor at UC, and he said, oh, yeah, I could use more of my students, and maybe they could have an attorney for a day. And then finally, in focusing on predictive data analytics and using data to try to keep people in their homes, it's primarily, you know, being tried here in Cincinnati. It was started over in England, but Cincinnati. And when Dayton person heard about it, he was kind of doing something similar. Oh, I'd like to connect with UC and see if we could do something like that. So just little steps.
Yeah. Those are, that can lead to big, big changes for individuals and families, for sure. And you also recently focused on housing choice vouchers and the temporary freeze in Cincinnati and Dayton. How are those voucher programs working? What are the big hurdles for that program and the people who really count on it?
One of the big hurdles is getting enough landlords. So if you want to give people choice, then you have to have enough landlords that will take the housing choice vouchers. So that's a big problem. And in Dayton, they try to recruit like 50 or 60 a year, I think. And then in Cincinnati, they have like a meet and greet where they bring in residents and landlords. What were some other things?
Yeah, again, this is a federal program that's one of the largest rental assistance programs in the history of America. And, you know, you find in your region, you know, in Dayton, the placement rate is 43%. In Cincinnati, it's a little over 60%. So edging up there a little bit, but the challenge of the private housing providers being lined up and working effectively with these local government agencies is so key. And it seems from our, you know, analysis of those solutions that, you know, there's a constant, it's a funding issue. So it is a federal issue. So we can point the finger at Washington, but more or less point the finger at your local rep and have a conversation with their congressional leaders to understand why the funding never changes for something so imperative. And also to understand, you know, the gating issues. for landlords to come on board. There's a lot of private market apartment units and even houses that might be viable for this if the housing authorities were able to more effectively streamline how they work with housing providers. So maybe, you know, we talk about less zoning restrictions. You know, we need to also think about how the restrictions upon some of these subsidies are impacting their rollout. And so just refining these solutions could have an immense impact on the overall need that we see in our community. I know that, you know, recent studies have shown that, you know, it's anywhere between 20 and 40,000 is the gap in affordable, you know, capital A affordable units needed. And that might just be correlated with, you know, the amount of cost burdened renters and owners we have in the region. But regardless of the stat, it's in the thousands, possibly tens of thousands. And so to get closer to that, to even throw a rock at that throne, you need to do something, I think, big. And so some of that happens with the federal level, yeah, with the housing authorities. I think that that could be a really, really prominent part of the solutions. It's not going to be one, like Hearns said. It's going to be many.
Yeah. And Hearns, you all talk to people who are living this. I mean, you talked to a mom who was really struggling. She needed a safe, affordable place to live. And I think I'm remembering, like, there was a house she was living in that wouldn't pass inspection. The landlord wouldn't fix it up. Her kids referred to it as the bug house. It was so nasty. I mean, this really has a direct impact on people's lives every day.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the thing. The woman you're talking about is Alice Wood, and I admire her so much because she was going through her own issues, as you detailed in housing and in her renting experience. But she was still advocating for other tenants' rights as well. And I think that's the part that we really want people to take away from this podcast, is that there are everyday people just like you, maybe may come from a different background, may come from a whole different experience, but they're just like you, and they're just trying to thrive. They're just trying to have that American dream that we always that we always admire. And I think, like, being able to show these stories and to show the faces, they no longer become just headlines. They no longer become, oh, okay, like, I hear these issues all the time, but I don't know anyone that affects. It becomes, oh, shoot, I see Alice went through this. It matters to me more. I see so-and-so and this family and you know, Siobhan Diego, they were the first guests we had on the show, on our podcast. We see them, we see the family that they're building, and we're saying, all right, cool. Like, we believe in their dream. We believe in them, in their work to advance and to thrive. So I have more of a connection to these stories. I have more of an investment. And I think that's our whole goal, honestly, with this podcast, is to make it more real, more tangible to a listener.
And a lot of, I mean, we're not saying any of these solutions, quote unquote, are easy, but some of them are not as complicated as you might think. For example, parking. We did a whole episode on parking. I learned so much about this. One of the things that they changed in Cincinnati with Connected Communities about as far as not requiring as much. And I thought, what's the big deal with parking? And then I did some research. Oh, there are 2 billion parking spots in the U.S., and that's the state of Connecticut. More square footage of parking than people. And hey, by the way, cars spend 95% of their lifetime parked. Could this be housing? And that was a whole episode. So just things that you may not think about.
Yeah. We're talking in this recorded interview about Brick by Brick, a regional community affairs program reporting on housing problems and solutions. We've talked some about the solutions Brick by Brick examines, what's working in Cincinnati, what's being tried in Cincinnati and Dayton. Talk about the sustainability work that's happening in South Cumminsville, Anne.
So that is where they have the near net zero village,
yes,
and also trying to keep older folks in their homes who may not be able to afford to stay there without some help. And Sister Barbara Bush, you guys have done lots of reporting with her, and that is an idea, what they're doing there, that the vice mayor said that she hopes that can spread to other communities. That's, you know, one of the bright things that's happening in Cincinnati. Not necessarily that we have to look, you know, pretty far away for these solutions.
Yeah. If I could just piggyback on that too. Although not for that story, I had an opportunity to speak with Sister Barbara Bush for our first story with the port. And she was emphasizing a lot about building these communities and how, like, sustaining housing or having people be involved in these conversations, it helps build stronger communities as well. So, yeah.
And Lucy, I think you point to a good point here, which is everybody in their lifespan is going to have different needs at different times, right? So sustainability is just as important as adding to new supply, is maybe reconverting and adapting housing stock we have or building stock we have to housing. Sustainability and maintaining, providing funds to allow for low-income folks to maintain, like that's what Working in Neighborhoods is doing up in Catlinsville. Yeah. And when we talked to Vice Mayor Jean-Michel Lemon-Kearney, she was all about how can we replicate this model? Because, you know, Working in Neighborhoods is working to connect certain neighborhoods, but they're not everywhere. They don't have the resources to do that. So where is the way that people can get behind solutions like this in their own neighborhoods is what we also want to help inform. Because we believe if people have the understanding and the awareness of ways that this can work, solutions that can be applied in their own neighborhoods, that they'll probably stand up at the ballot box or they'll stand up at their community council meetings and their, you know, improvement council meetings and hopefully make their voice heard and their wishes heard so that they can all move in the right direction.
What are some of the other big solutions, big housing solutions that the program has discussed that have really stuck with you, Mark?
I think the adaptive reuse is one of my favorite. This notion of converting, you know, it's such a talker, right? Because we can walk down the street and we can see, oh, that church closed recently or that temple, you know, or that warehouse that's been in my neighborhood a long time. What are they doing with this? And I think that diving into those solutions, we did our second episode on the podcast and probably a part two that's coming up is going to be focused on adaptive reuse. And we looked at office towers initially. So we were looking at the downtown space and Central Business District and other places. And, you know, Dayton and Cincinnati are both really active in doing this. And this is something that cities have been doing for a long time. So however we're able to shine a light, you know, when the community's doing something right and you can shine a light on that, it really just amplifies the potential of getting behind something like that and trying to clear the way to amplify it and scale it up. But that's very specific use case for every conversion, right? Every building like the Donnell Tower in Dayton, Center City Tower in Dayton. I think the Model Group is working to convert that. The Windsor Company is working on the Donnell Tower. Mm-hmm. We also have several happening here. Obviously, Carew Tower is in a longer-term process of redevelopment and conversion to bring on more residential housing. And part of the nuance with that, I love this solution. It's really interesting. I'm not going to anoint any solutions. We're not here to say these are the solutions that are going to solve everything. We're here to raise the awareness around all of the good things that are happening that are actually moving the ball forward. And if these can all work together, it's going to be able to create a better outcome for every community. But one of the things about that is that a lot of these are coming online and they're luxury housing, right? They're for higher income families. And one thing that we found and has been really surprising is the amount of research that's been done around something called filtration, which is the notion that, you know, when you leave a housing unit, whether it's a home, a single family detached dwelling, or it's an apartment or a condo or a townhome, and you move somewhere else, perhaps the person that moves in behind you or buys that home that you left is clearing the way in another unit. And is clearing the way in another unit. And it's not to be confused with the notion of like trickle-down economics. Just get that out of your head. I know it sounds similar, but it's not. It's really about more housing begets more housing options down the chain of income. And so, you know, the research has borne this out. And it'll be really interesting over the next few years as we have this massive apartment boom, as we have, and that'll dwindle eventually. And we have a lot of other conversions in housing to see how that migratory pattern happens with our locals. Because most of our communities are hoping to add population growth. We'd love to have more tax base, right? All of our city leaders would absolutely be thrilled. For a lot of people, they want the character of their community to stay the same, but they want to have a more decent and upstanding way for everyone to live. The quality of life, right? So where can we find the right compromise of mixing more population, more variety and diversity in our neighborhoods, whether it's businesses or people, and find that ecosystem that's like a balanced setup? To me, it's like watching a movie unfold. Every solution we do, we get to see like a chapter and a potential nuanced shaping of that. And it's kind of like sculpting new cities.
And just to show a real life example of the filtration, I spoke to a young woman, to a senior actually, who moved into John Arthur Flats, the LGBTQ affirming senior housing in Cincinnati. And she was moving there to downsize. And just, I guess just a little spoiler for our upcoming episode. But she moved there, and her moving there allowed her old duplex to be utilized by someone who just left a shelter home. So, you know, the filtration, there's actual examples of it happening in the community. And of course, that speaks to the whole supply and the more need for housing.
Yeah. Hearns, so many of your episodes explore how other communities are tackling these same problems. Sometimes after talking about what's happening in Cincinnati and Dayton, you go a little bit farther afield to see what other communities are doing. Mm-hmm. Have any of those other communities' approaches really stuck with you?
Yeah, I would say I would take it international. We did a story about data analytics and how there was a company out in Maidstone, England, who was using data analytics to prevent evictions. And so the whole idea of it was that they're taking data from these folks, you know, water bills and, you know, electric bills, car payments, et cetera. And based off the system that they came up with, if somebody missed a payment, for example, the system would alert them of this person having a financial issue. And then they would step in before an eviction notice is even written. So these preventative measures, I feel like, are so innovative, primarily because they save money. There's so much research that that shows that having these preventative measures cost significantly less than people becoming homeless. So stories like that linger with me because I'm like, all right, if that's working over there, I just wonder if it'll work in other places like Cincinnati. And Cincinnati is actually starting a program similar to that. They started this past July, Strategies to End Homelessness. They've been working on something like that. So we'll see if it has the same effect.
Yeah. And what are some of the big questions you're looking to answer in the future? Not for you to give away all the secrets, but some of the stuff you're looking to explore.
Well, we have an upcoming episode looking at, what about the obvious? Building large apartment units. That certainly would quickly add more housing. And we know not everybody's in favor of it. You guys just covered a meeting looking at a development in Bond Hill. So we also went to the suburbs and Anderson Township adding more units, and there are many more as well. So that's one thing we're looking into.
Yeah. Well, we will all stay tuned. I've been talking with Brick by Brick host and producer Ann Thompson, multimedia journalist Hearns Laguerre Jr., and executive producer Mark Lammers. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Lucy.
You can find a link to Brick by Brick, Solutions for a Thriving Community, on our website, wvxu.org, or on cetconnect.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.